Welcome back to America's leading higher education podcast, The EdUp Experience, where we make education your business. Hosts Dr. Joe Salustio, Elizabeth Leiba, and producer Elvin Freites bring you the brightest and most influential minds in higher education today. We explore innovations, ideas, and issues in higher education and beyond, and hopefully have a little fun along the way. Now let's get to it. Are you using the right mix of channels to get in front of your audience? Is your messaging personalized and delivered in a medium your audience responds to? Are you spending more time building reports than listening in on what your audience wants? These are not easy questions to answer. That's why our great friends at MDT Marketing are offering a free audit of your marketing efforts. Head to www.mdtmarketing.com/edup and submit your information for your free consultation today. Look, guys, you got nothing to lose. It's free. I don't know why you wouldn't want a free audit to tell you what you're doing, whether it's effective, and how you can make some incremental changes that can make a big difference moving forward. That's www.mdtmarketing.com/edup. Welcome back, everybody. This is the EdUp Experience, where we make education your business, interviewing the brightest and most influential minds in higher education and beyond. My name is Dr. Joe Salustio. Always with me. Oh, wait, is she here? Oh, yeah, she is here today. Here she is. The amazing Liz. Liz, there you are.
Oh, that was funny because when you said that, I looked down because I'm like, what happened? Did I like log off accidentally? Oh, gosh. You had me going for a second.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, as our listeners, if they listen to, I would say if they listen to the majority of our episodes or even pop in every once in a while, you'll see that we have an ongoing saga. Now we talk about it.
Saga? That's what it is right now?
And this is how devious I am when it comes to lists.
Devious. But
I have now figured out how to use my Blue Yeti microphone, which is a solid microphone. I could have figured it out.
Are you trying to get some kind of endorsement deal? Why are you saying that you have
yes.
Blue Yeti microphone?
Okay. This Blue Yeti I'm holding up in my hand to the camera. and Liz is now getting notes from our producer,
Alfred Baker,
about how she is having trouble using her microphone. When she gets really excited, that the it starts to pop and
all kinds of stuff.
So I have decided it's my job to get you as excited as possible, just like I did at the beginning of this episode. So now I've assured that you will get notes.
Oh no. So that's what you're doing? So it's a part of your master plan. You're like a mastermind, like one of those criminal masterminds that has their whole like wah-ha-ha. Are you rubbing your hands together right now and twirling your mustache?
I am.
Oh man.
And speaking of masterminds, although not the criminal kind.
Yeah.
We have an amazing guest.
This is on the good side.
A good mastermind. Yeah, we have an amazing guest for you guys today. And his name is Akiba Kovitz, and he is president and CEO of Foundry College. Akiba, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. My background includes a lot of background in law, so I have to think carefully about that criminal mastermind part.
I'm glad you didn't say my background includes a lot of criminals. So we would have been, you know, going down a different path. But yes, you are a lawyer and you've done some pretty amazing things. Foundry College, we've connected with your colleague, Stephen Coslin, who came on and talked to us about active learning and all of the things going on. But for those that didn't listen to that episode, give us a once over about Foundry College, what you're doing, how you're doing it, and why it's catching fire.
Thanks. First of all, thanks for the invitation. I'm very happy to be here. I've been president and CEO of Foundry College for a little under a year now. I do want to shout out to Stephen Coslin, who is our founder. I've worked with Stephen for, I guess, almost now 20 years. We were together at Harvard, where he was in psychology and I was at the law school. Foundry College aims to disrupt the traditional two-year college model. We're doing that by providing learners with 21st century skills and knowledge that they need for the jobs of today and the jobs of tomorrow. So we do that in a number of ways, and I'm sure we'll get into that over the hour. We provide foundational courses that give broad skills that, again, Stephen and his team, when we started, discovered that employers say are lacking and needed most. So those include oral and written communication, collaboration and problem solving. We call those durable foundational skills. And then using a stackable model, which I hope we get into in the hour, you can then, based on that foundation, master knowledge specific to job pathways that are in high demand. So we have two pathways, one in project management, one is Salesforce administration, again, built on top of those foundational skills. And you earn a recognized third-party credential from Salesforce, from CompTIA. We can talk more about that. And we build those credential certificates in areas where learners can start in about 9 months and make $50,000 plus. And on top of that, the next thing that we're building is an associate's degree. And we are on the road to becoming a nationally accredited community college. And from there, you can go anywhere. Our courses, our foundational courses, each give 3 credits from ACE, so you can transfer those credits anywhere you want. And then you can get your associate's degree from us, which we're in the process of completing the accreditation process. And then again, from there, transfer to a 4-year college. You can step on and off the ladder whenever you want of this value chain. And that's what we're doing. We think this is an area of education that is in need of disruption. And we can get more into the particulars, but that's the 45-second version of Foundry College.
All right. So it's kind of big news that you're going to an associate degree, right? I mean, that's a big step in degree granting, and it's a hard process. Accreditation has never been, I don't think anybody ever came and said accreditation, receiving accreditation and going through the process was easy. How significant is that to the future of Foundry College to go to the associate degree level?
Well, to start out with, first of all, I'll answer the question directly. It's an extraordinary step. I think accreditation, rightly so, is a very difficult process. We're going for associate's accreditation nationally through DEAC. And the way to do that is a series of very complicated but very important steps that we've been taking. So the first step was through ACE, getting our courses accredited through the American Council on Education so that they can be transfer accredited. And then the next step was to go through the Bureau of Postsecondary Private Education, BPPE, from California. We completed that process. And the next step is to go through DEAC. I think the market is extraordinarily full right now with all kinds of new credentials coming from everyone and everywhere. And I think in the old world, the presumption was that something had value because it had this degree attached to it. Now, a lot of that is beginning to change. I think that way of looking at things is slowly beginning to change, but there's still some part, I think a significant, maybe even a majority part of the learners out there who want something beyond just a credential they put on LinkedIn. We certainly want to give them that. And for instance, from us, you can get a super badge from Salesforce. So directly from them, and they're one of our partners. But on top of that, do people still need to get a degree? And we don't compel people to go to the top of the stack, but we want to give them the opportunity to do that. So giving them a nationally accredited community college associate's degree, we think is a huge step. To our knowledge, it's not been done. And it is a heavy, heavy lift to do. And as someone who oversaw accreditation processes at other institutions, it is complex. It is time consuming. It draws in every single member of the entire team. And it in fact, you know, it's something that we have to focus on, that we don't spend time on doing other things. But we do feel that for our learners, having an easily valued credential, so for instance, an associate's degree, is incredibly valuable.
And can you tell me what the associate degree will grant? Is it an associate degree in like general business, or is it in the specific skills, or do you not?
It's in business administration, effectively business management. So, and all of what we're doing, obviously until now, has been devoted to that purpose. And this was the original purpose. If you go back to the original press releases that Stephen and the team put out 2.5 years ago, this was always the goal. It's always been the goal. And we're just keeping our eyes on the prize as we go.
Yeah, you know, to your point, it is. And by the way, let me just add in here that DEAC, for those that don't know, is the Distance Education Accrediting Commission. It's a nationally accredited
agency. It gives national accreditation to primarily schools that have distance education or online learning. So congratulations, by the way, because it is a heavy load for anybody that's ever been through that process to get a program accredited or an institution accredited. It is massive. And you're right. It takes away, it takes you every piece of energy and knowledge that a staff has and puts it into the process, which I think is the point, right? It's about looking at every area to make sure that the degrees pass the muster. So congratulations. And back to your point, you're offering a credential. You want to come in for a shorter period of time. You want to get out and start working. Here's a recognized credential. You want to continue to go up the higher education ladder and get a degree in general business administration or whatever to make yourself more available as a leader, potentially. You can take that path, right? And I think, Akiba, and I'm hoping you agree here, it's about choice for the student because everybody wants something different. So you have to offer the different pathways.
I think so. I think more broadly, what I've seen in my too many years now in education, first as a professor and as an administrator, is in the past, I think we presumed, especially at places like Harvard and elsewhere, not to say anything negative about my friends at Harvard, that we knew what students should learn. We were going to teach it the way we thought they should learn it. And it was up to them to figure out how to make it applicable to what they wanted to do in life. We just assumed that that credential, wherever it came from, because we were the experts, people should do what we told them to do. We professed to know, and we did know, we had our PhDs or whatever. I think what really changed about 10, 12 years ago is sort of the flipping of this perspective. First of all, just seeing learners as customers. And I wrote about that about 10 years ago and got a lot of blowback from my colleagues. I think I didn't mean it to think of them as sort of someone buying, you know, any widget. Of course, education is very specific. But once you see learners as customers, as consuming something, then they're just like any consumer, any customer, they're exchanging something of value, so time and money, for something that has value, so a credential. And that altered mindset, I think, changes everything you do. Now you have to figure out what the customer, what the learner needs to get where they want to go. And that's a huge mind shift. It really is. It's no longer you do what we say and figure out what we said and tell it back to us in a couple of months. Instead, it's where do you folks want to go with this? And what Foundry College discovered at the beginning and at the bottom of our stack is what employers want is they want people to have these durable professional skills that will last them for the rest of their career. So, you know, oral and written communication, collaboration, problem solving. And I think in the past, you expected someone to take 4 years and a bachelor's degree and sort of learn those skills by osmosis, right? You were in a giant lecture classes and you saw how your professor made arguments. And then you went into recitation and you made arguments in front of your other people in the recitation. And then you went to seminars and you sort of learned that stuff as a secondary or tertiary skill. What we do is we teach those skills absolutely directly and on our own proprietary, fully online, fully synchronous platform called The Forge. We believe the only really way to teach those sorts of skills directly is to build an experience from the ground up that focuses on things like breakout groups, as opposed to having those be a secondary effect. You know, you have some kind of business communication software like Zoom, and then maybe you throw in a breakout room. We built The Forge from the ground up to teach people those interpersonal skills. They work together on documents. So we guarantee to those people to employers when they see a Foundry credential, that everyone who graduates has those professional skills, those personal skills, those foundational skills that will last you for the rest of your career. So we're trying to see that learner as a customer who, as you said, can start out from the beginning and do the foundational skills or those professional skills, then get a job based on, you know, under 9 months, be a Salesforce administrator, for example, step off the ladder for a couple of years, make real money as a white collar worker. And then if you want to come back, When we're ready, we'll give you an associate's degree. And then, as I said before, you can just keep going up the ladder. I think learners now, especially mid, late, hopefully pandemic, are looking for choice. And they're looking for things in terms of months and not years. And they don't want to commit to 4 years of one path or even 2 years of one path. They want to know that there are ways to step on, ways to step off. And when you step off, you're all ready to do something productive. And by that, I mean, you know, very directly, get a job, make $50,000 a year, those sorts of very direct things, not be a better person, which I do think education should do. But consumers want something very explicit. They want, in 6 months, in 9 months, I'll have these skills, I'll be able to get that job, it'll pay this much. And these are fields that are growing. So I know there are jobs out there.
Well, you know, you said one thing that resonated with me in there, that you built the Forge as an experience from the ground up. We've also tried to do that here at the EdUp Experience podcast. And you also said something way at the beginning of that, that the number of years that you've been in higher education. I also have somebody here with us that's been in higher education for, I don't even know how long, just an incredible amount of time, my co-host Elizabeth Leiba.
Yes, I have. And you were my mentor along this journey over the past year. And I leaned on you with the vast wealth of experience that you have.
I like where this is going, I got to be honest.
Wildly beyond anything that I've done in the sector. So I'm definitely going to be asking you to weigh in on some of these questions. So I think some of this may be out of my wheelhouse. But I have loved everything that Akiba has talked about, because I think it really speaks to everything that we talk about on the podcast in terms of when we think about practical skills, knowledge. Students are so different than maybe they were 20 years ago, in that I think when I went to school back in the Stone Ages, as you know, Joe, the whole drive was you had to get a degree. That was like the ultimate goal. Like if you didn't finish with a degree, then that was a failure. And I think now we have students that are thinking in terms of the stackable credentials, and we as a sector are thinking about that. I guess my question would be in terms of the process of thinking about which types of credentials and programs you bring to your students, can you speak a little bit to that? Because I think sometimes in some of the traditional circles, there is a struggle, and I've seen it at a couple institutions where I've worked, where it's like, okay, we want to bring on something, we want to look at how we can kind of shake things up, but we always seem to stutter step when it comes to what are some of the hot and up and coming certificate programs that we really need to roll out so that we can be more effective. And as Joe mentioned, and you spoke to, there's also accreditation and so many things that go into that. What has been your philosophy? I think one of the first guests we had, and Joe can probably attest to this, was really interesting, was we spoke with Bernie Weiss, who's the CEO, president of iHeartMedia New York. And one of the fascinating things he talked about was hiring sales reps that didn't know how to use Salesforce. And when I saw Salesforce administrator, I was like, wow, one of the key parts of how to have a successful Salesforce organization, marketing, everything that needs to be done in terms of being successful in a lot of corporations, organizations, is you have to have project management. You have to have sales, and you have to be able to manage your leads. What was part of your decision-making process? And can you take us through that a little bit as far as some of the tips and strategies you would advise for leaders that are out there thinking, hey, we need to start doing some of this, but they're not exactly sure where to start?
Absolutely. And I'm glad that Stephen Coslin, my colleague and friend, was previously on the podcast, and people can go back and listen to what he said as well. Mm-hmm. I think one of the huge trends that every school has to think about, in my view, is to train people in fields and credential people in fields that will be around for 25, 35 years. So jobs that won't be replaced by automation or robots or AI. So that's the first criteria, is to give people, I mean, there are lots of coding academies, for instance, out there. We're not doing that sort of thing because other people are doing that really well. So the criteria we came up with were, one, a job that would not be replaced in the near future by automation. So how can we say to someone, listen, if you commit for a couple of years or a couple of months, depending on how far up the ladder you want to go, to Foundry College, we'll train you in something that you can do for a generation, for 20 plus years. No one can see into the future, but Salesforce administration is not something that's going to be automated in the next decade. I think it's part of the reason it's such a rapidly growing field. Project management also. It has to do with managing humans, right? And managing humans, you know, as predictable as we, as AI might think we can be, to manage us and to manage the projects we do requires another human. So the other criteria are we wanted people to who are going to commit to us that the starting salary was $50,000 or more. We wanted another criterion was we wanted people to be able to do the job remotely as an option. We wanted that job possibility to have significant growth rates. So it's not just jobs that are here now, but jobs that are continuing to grow. We also, we know, I love Foundry College. I've committed my career to it. It's an extraordinary idea, but it's not a particularly well-known brand name. It's just, that's just the reality of it. So we're only picking credentials where there's a recognizable third-party credential that can go onto your LinkedIn profile. So Salesforce super badges, absolutely coin of the realm. If you apply for a Salesforce administrator job and you have a Foundry College certificate, might help, probably not, honestly, but those three super badges from Salesforce will help you get the job. The three, the having the certified credential from CompTIA for project management, at least you'll get the interview. And again, those durable professional skills that we give you will help you get, once you got the interview, will help you get through the interview. We only pick credentials that doesn't require a college degree or job experience. We want someone to be able to say, listen, I want to make a real change. I don't have experience, but I have these skills that I've developed through Foundry College. And the other thing that's particular about what we do is all of our classes are synchronous. So I think one of the real advantages we have over other possibilities that you take if you're looking to change careers is you can do Foundry College part-time. And it's synchronous. And again, as someone who was involved very early on in edX, I believe that asynchronous learning can be really powerful. We think that in order to teach the kind of skills that we're teaching, especially those interpersonal skills, it has to be interpersonal. You have to be working with fellow colleagues at the same time. So we're committed to fully synchronous and further committed to really no homework. Because we as someone who used to teach at a pretty good law school, I mean, a lot of those students, they were committed full time to this. They had spent a lot of money usually on that pathway. We could count on them doing a lot of homework. But in, for most people, you know, they're working full time, they're juggling family stuff. We just have to presume that people are not gonna do homework. We hope they do. For our ACE track, we do expect that you doing some preparation. But in reality, we have to accept students coming to class as sort of, we have to teach them from the beginning. And the Forge was built as a lecture-based platform, but as a lecture-based platform that breaks out into these small groups. So those are the criteria we use, again, as an overview. Human skills, something that you can count on for doing forever, or at least as far as forever as we can see, given how fast things change. Reasonable entry-level salary, $50,000 or more a year, significant job growth rate every year, a third-party credential, doesn't require experience or a college degree, and that can be taught live the way we do. So that's what we've picked the credentials. We are picking new credentials as we go. I'm not in a position yet where we can announce them, but those are the criteria we use to choose our pathways.
You sure you don't want to announce those live on the EdUp Experience? No.
I know, right?
We'll pressure you into it.
Yeah,
but you know what is awesome? I'm sorry, Joe. And Akib is probably like, he's like, go ahead. Because I couldn't contain myself. And I'm sure Elvin's going to give me a negative point here because maybe the microphone is popping. But I was totally mind blown because I think a lot of what you said is very revolutionary. It probably shouldn't be. And I probably shouldn't be so like, but the idea of being so aware of the fact that students need to get out there and students want jobs and jobs that pay well. And I think sometimes in education, we've been telling the student that you're supposed to go to school for the love of knowledge and you just want to be a better person, like you said earlier, which is nothing wrong with that. But at the end of the day, the students need to be able to pay back their student loans. They need to be able to get out there and buy a house and have a family and all the things that people do. And I think the millennials kind of twisted that whole story when they were like, hey, we can't even survive. We're out here, we're crushed by student loan debt. So I love the idea that you're very intentional as far as the corporate partnerships, the idea of a job that pays well, the idea that it's a job that's growing. Why do you think that the sector, and this is more of, I guess, a philosophical question, and I say this because I'm asking this because I know that you have so much experience in the field and that you've worked in terms of writing about the field as well and have so much knowledge about it, the sector. Why do you think that we as a sector have been slow to incorporate a lot of this? And even a lot of what you're saying is so revolutionary that I don't think, and Joe can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we've heard, other than obviously your colleague that came on, I don't think we've really heard a lot of schools speaking this kind of language.
If you're experiencing any level of marketing challenge right now, you've got to ask the hard questions and you need answers. Are you using the right mix of channels to get in front of your future students? Is your messaging personalized and delivered in a medium your audience and future students will respond to? And are you spending more time building reporting than listening in on what your students really want? All of these questions will get answered when you sign up for your free consultation with MDT Marketing. Head to mdtmarketing.com/edup, submit your information, and talk to MDT. Don't go it alone. Find the right partner. The guys at MDT, the team at MDT is absolutely amazing. Whether your challenge is the cost of inquiries, your melt, your branding, the bad and incomplete information that come with your inquiries, whatever it is, an audit of your challenges will help your institution and it's free. mdtmarketing.com/edup.
I think it goes back to, in part, what I was saying before. What's the song from the 80s? Everybody wants to rule the world.
Is that REM?
No, I think it's Tears for Fears.
Tears for Fears.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Everybody wants to rule the world. Yeah.
I think you know it requires the ability to step back from yourself. Full credit for this goes to Stephen Kotlin, right? So, you know, a chaired professor at Harvard, dean for social sciences at Harvard, and you know, in the past, I think we saw those educational experiences, you know, like 4-year colleges, as this very exclusive place where, you know, you had to compete, you know, and only a tiny percentage of people got in. When you're in that mindset and you're the great, you know, sage on the stage who knows everything about your field, you know, I taught civil rights law and things like that. And I know a lot, you know, I do know a great deal. And it's tempting to want to impart all of that, you know, I'm using air quotes that you can't see, wisdom to your learners. Once you step out of that mindset, and I left that mindset to go to edX, because here we all of a sudden we had the technology with increased bandwidth to make that sort of very exclusive education that Harvard, MIT, and the other early edX partners had available to anyone, anywhere with an internet connection. You open up, you know, metaphorically those you know, gates around Harvard Yard, and you make it available to everyone. Once you do that, it's incumbent on you to figure out how to see education from the perspective of the rest of the world, not the 2% or 3% or 1% that get into those top schools, but everyone. And once you do that, you can't use that same mindset, which is, well, those people before wanted, you know, a network and they wanted wisdom and they wanted, you know, to be able to, you know, sound really smart at, like, you know, New York City cocktail parties. None of that stuff's relevant to those folks. They might be interested in it, but it's not the coin that they can use to pay their rent or their mortgage. They need job skills. So once you change that mindset and you say, okay, so maybe if you gave everyone the opportunity to get that really exclusive education in the past, maybe some people would take it, but most people can only think in months and they can only think from the mindset of, you know, they need a job. They need to support their families. They need to support themselves. They need to support someone else. Once you do that, you really have to figure out what that perspective is. And then what you do is you then mix that with, okay, so that's what the consumer wants. But we also have to figure out, we have to sort of look at that, those desires from the consumer, from that learner, through the eyes of the employer, which is what I was saying before, is what skills are they looking for that their learners, their potential employees don't have now? And that's part of the problem of before Foundry, if someone went and got, you know, what I would might somewhat derisively call sort of a set of brittle skills, like coding in a particular language. If they don't have those foundational, durable professional skills, I think what people used to call soft skills, then they're not going to last that long at that company because they can't communicate with their colleagues. They can't, you know, network to the next job in that company. They can't figure out how to get the next job. So if you combine that perspective of the learner, of the customer, with the perspective of the employer, and then you hire the kind of people that we've hired to teach the courses we have. So Salesforce teachers, I mean, they're not people that are Harvard educated, whatever. They're people that have worked in Salesforce and they know exactly how to teach people how to use Salesforce because that's what they've done. And they've been teaching people to do it, you know, for as long as people have been teaching those things. So once you step off of the sort of the, that sort of higher, you know, I'm thinking of Star Wars now, like just because you have the higher ground doesn't necessarily mean that you win every battle. And those top schools, they do have the higher ground, but to what end? I mean, to serve their own purposes, to stay on the higher ground, or do you have to sort of see the world from that lower perspective and understand from that perspective of people who are not hoping to get inside Harvard Yard or, you know, be able to be, you know, cute at a New York City cocktail party, but who just need a job, a good job, that's not going to be, you know, replaced by automation in 25 years. Once you change that perspective and you really try to figure out what they want, and not necessarily what your college is going to make the most money doing, but what those consumers want, and then you meet up with the employer, I think you come up with those criteria that I outlined before.
And I have to say, before I pass it back to Joe, I'm here for this, Iki, because you've already had a reference to a Tears for Fears song, which is one of my favorite groups of all time. You've had a reference to Star Wars, which is also one of my favorite movies of all time. So I think I'm like in heaven right now. I'm done, Joe.
You're done.
I'm done. I'm toast.
Iki, I want to ask you, because you did some consulting with Entangled Ventures that was acquired by Guild, and you know, Guild's growing massively. There's this whole other area of higher education in the employer side, which always has fascinated me, why, you know, how that's growing so quickly. And then you see companies like InStride trying to replicate that model to some degree. What's going on with the, you know, are students and our employers so strapped with time and with information that they have to, you know, go to brokers, so to speak, to connect with educational companies? Is the noise so loud that there's benefit in that? Or are we doing a really poor job in higher ed getting in front of the potential students?
I think it's a combination of different factors. I'm sitting here, I'm using an Amazon Prime box to prop up my laptop right now. There are lots of small shipping companies, you know, that provide, you know, if you want some particular thing, you can go online, you can Google it, and you can find that particular little object that you might really want. But Amazon is the marketplace that makes it really easily, quickly accessible. You can count on it. And what Amazon does to some degree is it sort of curates those products, and then you have reviews. I think that's the role that Guild and InStride and newer companies like LearnIn that we have a partnership with, that they're trying to play, which is instead of a learning and development office at a giant company, even a giant company where they have these huge offices, trying to figure out who provides the absolute best training. And again, let's stick with Salesforce. If you work with one of these brokers, with one of these marketplaces, they do that first level effectively, like, you know, the 5 stars, 4 stars. They make sure that, and my former colleagues at Tangled, who are now at Guild, they do that work for you, right? They provide a really, in my view, a really valuable service that says, okay, so you find, you know, company X that you don't have the right people for this field. So you can go and figure out, you know, who has the best version of that class and then build a partnership with them. Or you can just have one partnership with Guild or InStride or LearnIn or something like that. And then they can curate that for you. So, and to answer the second part of your question, I think there is a lot of noise out there. I think in the past there were, you know, 10 schools or providers out there that provided, you know, some particular skill, and now there are 50 or 100. And the question is, which is the best one? And, you know, as a company, you don't want to make a partnership with a brand new startup that doesn't have stable financing. Guild does all that work for you. And I think it really is valuable. And I think the market has spoken with how quickly Guild has grown. And you have these other companies like InStride, like LearnIn, and others that are developing, because it is a valuable service to provide for companies. So, you know, you could go out there. I think some companies are creating their own universities in effect, right? Comcast is an example of that, that has its own giant internal learning and development. And there are others that are doing this, providing it for their own learners, providing it as a service to others as well.
Google, is another example, right?
Yeah, lots of them. And it in some ways, there's just so much noise. It's wonderful noise, actually. It's one of those, like, I don't know what the right metaphor is, but it's like a bad drum circle or something like that, where, you know, people are having fun and there's lots of creativity, but it's really hard to figure out where the, you know, where the rhythm is actually going to go. But if you have someone like Guild and they put these partners through their paces and then say, okay, so I can say for sure, or as close as for sure as you can get in this world, that this school, this provider is solid. What they're doing makes sense. It's going to get you where you want to go. That just is much faster. And if you can turn that on and off real fast and say, okay, so our company is pivoting. We need 250 people who do X. You go to your rep at Guild or InStride or LearnIn and they say, okay, you know, I need this. And then they source it for you. So I think brokers have always played a role in business, you know, since the beginning of time. And I think given how much chaos there is right now in education, again, beautiful chaos, but still chaos, I think there's a role, a valuable role to be played by these companies. And I'm not a paid spokesperson for any of those companies, I should say.
Well, we get to, that's the beautiful thing about this podcast is that we just kind of do whatever comes our way and talk about it. And that's what comes out the other end. Akiba, let me ask you about, you know, you said something earlier that stuck with me when you're talking about the learners and you're talking about choice and consumerism. And if coronavirus has showed us one thing, it's that students might be more okay with an in and out type of model. I've experienced that at my university. A lot of it's been by necessity, right? Because somebody gets sick or, you know, having trouble at work because, you know, maybe they're going to get laid off. So they're in, they're out, they're in, they're out. The in and out type of model is kind of what lifelong learning is about, right? You get something, you go to work, you come back, you get something else, you stack it, and it gets you a better job and a better job and a better job. Do you think the in and out student is emerging here? Somebody that's demanding more of a flexibility, meeting them where they are versus the requirement of X, Y, or Z, and you have to go for this long. You know, in other words, to your point, shorter, more condensed, you know, I've finished it. Now I'm going to take a little bit of a break. I'm going to come back and do something, finish it, take a little bit of a break rather than the years and years of investment.
Absolutely. I think that's a huge part of what we're seeing in education now. I have 2 teenagers and, you know, I hate to be, you know, reductivist like this, but the sort of TLDR mentality, we can shake our fists at it, you know, like, you know, they don't read anymore and they don't read books and, you know, they're just watching, they're on their devices all day. You know, you can tell those kids to get off your lawn or, you know, that's fine. And there are lots of people who do that. I think the problem is that, you know, to kill the metaphor, that lawn is, you know, that grassy, leafy quad at most colleges. Kids don't want that. I mean, whether you're talking about someone who's 18 or someone who's 30, anyone in that generation, which is still the sweet spot for a bulk of the education, we can talk more about lifelong learning as well. They're looking for things that are different than what we looked for before. And again, we can rail against it and talk about how bad the world is and how much the world has changed, or we can just accept that that's the way things are, that devices and email versus books and texting, and now you know it's gotten even lesser than that, you know, down to WhatsApp and down to the simplest things and emojis on Slack,
Clubhouse.
I tried to stay a little bit away from Clubhouse because, you know, I'm president and CEO of a company and it's totally addictive. But I think, you know, in a given day probably get, I don't know, 350 or 400 Slacks, maybe more a day, sometimes 100 in an hour. And that's just the way we run. And I could tell people to, like, you know, put it in long form and put it in snail mail and send it to me. But I think we have to take into account that the learners now are looking for shorter, curated experiences, the ones that they want, in the same way that you couldn't expect someone now to, you know, wait till Thursday night to watch Friends, to speak of a show that my kids have gotten into 20 years after I did. They want to be able to watch it when they want to watch it. That's just the mindset. And again, you can jump up and down and tell them to get off your lawn. It's not going to help. You have to figure out where they are and still educate them, right? You don't give in and say, okay, so now we're just going to give you little bite-sized pieces of things and you're going to learn something that's going to help you for a week and then you're going to learn a new thing. Even given that relative short-term mindset, can we teach them things that will last them for a lifetime? So those durable professional skills about how to really communicate effectively and collaborate with other people, how to present at a meeting, right? As opposed to just hoping that you pick it up after your first 5 disastrous or 100 disastrous meetings, show you how to present. We can spotlight you on the Forge on our platform in front of the whole class and you present. And again, that was built from the ground up, not something that we had to build post hoc after, you know, for something like Zoom, but built from the ground up to show you that you had those skills. Again, Stephen Kostin was one of the great scholars of psychology in the history of the world, and also wrote a bestseller about PowerPoint, right? So what we have in him is this sort of Swiss Army knife tool that can do everything. It teaches us those basic skills, how people learn. And what you talked about with Stephen was those deep principles of active learning about how humans learn, but then apply it to, okay, so we don't learn anymore, you know, sitting in ancient Greece, listening to Aristotle talk to us about the forms of the planet, but we do it on PowerPoint and we do it online now. And he's also the world's leading expert on how to do that. So our education tries to do both of those things. And again, we meet the learner where they are. This is what they want. They don't want these 4-year experiences. They want to be able to jump onto the ladder for 3 months, get a certified credential, go off and do something else, travel, experience, make some money, do that job remotely, come back, finish an associate's degree, do something with that for a while, go someplace else, get a bachelor's degree. Who knows where it goes from there?
You know, you and Liz, I'll have you. Sorry, I just want to say one thing.
Go ahead.
The concept of, not that I keep saying one more thing, right?
I know. It's fascinating stuff, though.
I know the concept of immediacy is one that higher ed has to deal with, and we will continue to have to deal with it because. I mean, you said you have teenagers, Akiba. I have a 6-year-old. Her name is Gemma. I will tell you, when she wants to watch TV and I say, you know, Doc McStuffins isn't on today, she looks at me and goes, yes, it is. I could get it anytime I want. I just put on Disney Plus. I'm like, who am I talking to
right now?
Am I talking to? You know, the apps on the TV, you know, Disney Plus or Amazon Prime. And I'm like arguing with her. I'm like saying, it's not on. It's not on TV. And she's like, what are you talking about? She's looking at me like I'm like an idiot. Like, I don't know what I'm saying. Cause I'm trying to just dodge like regular TV programming doesn't exist. It's about immediacy. I want it. I could get it now. And then I go to the, like the, you know, since you brought up movies, The Matrix, where they're up there and, you know, says, can you fly the, I don't remember who was talking to who, but can you fly this helicopter? And they just download it into the person's brain. I don't think we'll ever get there, but that concept of immediacy has to be somewhere in the middle. How can I get what I need quickly without the huge investment in time? Because as we know, life is short, right, Liz?
Oh yeah, especially for elders like me. I'm trying to
look for
everything that I can. And my question as well for Dr. Kovitz, I definitely want to throw this in here because I feel like this concept of immediacy and lifelong learning and reimagining what it means to consume education. Because like you said, we're consumers. And I think like you, I have, well, my daughter's a little bit older. She's 22, but I have some younger ones that are around the same age as Joe's daughter. And they are asking and reimagining what they want for themselves. And a part of that is not necessarily like what we did, the traditional, you know, Ivy crawling up the building. They don't really necessarily, not all of them want that. So how do we respond to them? Another thing, since you said that you taught civil rights law, that I'm fascinated about the idea of is how being able to jump on and off the ladder and not necessarily look at the four-year degree ultimately as the goal, but maybe short bite-sized or stackable credentials to get to that when you're ready. Do you feel as though this is also a piece of the puzzle in terms of equity? Because I think about that as well, as far as the elitism and almost that when we think about education, higher education in particular, it should be a way to even the playing field, but a lot of times it serves as a way to actually exclude those that don't necessarily come from circumstances where they're able to maybe pursue a four-year degree, or they can't afford it, or they don't really understand the mechanism. So because of that, they get discouraged. What is your thought process in terms of how the kinds of programs that you are able to offer through your college are able to increase access for students that might not have been served necessarily as well previous to that?
Absolutely. I think, as I said before, I left a very exclusive sort of form of education in order to just throw the doors open. I think it's wrong that a very small, it's unjust that the only people that get access to, for instance, the kind of quality law education that we offered at Harvard or other, you know, very exclusive law schools, that's only available to at the time to, or Harvard College or wherever you want, just to the people that managed to get in, however you get into those places, that's not okay. Once I saw the opportunity to open those doors up to every single person on the planet that had access to the internet, it's just, you know, it's what, in my view, what every teacher should dream of, not sort of 80, you know, carefully curated students that are either, you know, borrowing tons of money or, come from money and can pay for it, but to anyone who wants, anyone who can get to a library if they don't have their own device, get to broadband somewhere. And again, there are limitations based on who has access to the interwebs. And that's still something problematic. And I know something that the current US administration is trying to address as well in terms of rural broadband access. But in terms of Foundry College, I'll mention one of our particular partners is the George Kaiser Family Foundation in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And what they realized, and the reason they partnered with us, is especially, you know, once the pandemic hit, and even before, they realized that there were people in that community, which is a, you know, a small Midwestern city, that a lot of their jobs were being automated and they were being left out of work. So if they worked in a small factory, if they worked doing what was before a fairly physically repetitive job, those jobs are going away. And what they wanted to do was have us train them in a job that without any kind of requirement, without a college degree, without any job experience, we have extraordinarily minimal admissions requirements. Effectively, it's open enrollment. Anyone who wants, who puts the time in, again, it's not easy. You have to be live in class. You have to work with your fellow students. It's hard work what we have people do. It's rigorous. And that's, again, going back to the beginning of the conversation, why we felt like we should go through ACE certification and go through DEAC accreditation as well. It opens those barriers to access to anyone who wants it. And maybe before you felt like you couldn't get a white collar job that paid $50,000 a year because you couldn't go to college because you couldn't afford it. We're affordable. Again, we're stackable, so you can jump on and jump off as your life allows you to. So I honestly do think, and we do have significant minority representation in our student population. We are also partnering here. For instance, I live in New York City with a majority minority college, St. Francis College here, to create a high school to college bridge program for New York City public school students. Especially this year, I have a child in New York City public schools. The seniors this year in high school are in just terrible numbers, are disappearing. These are students that are, you know, what we used to call college material, but their grades are too low and they've sort of dropped off. Can we find ways through the kinds of education that we provide, that Foundry provides, that St. Francis College provides, to bring people into that life of $50,000 a year plus, to be able to do it remotely so you don't have to commute every day and put yourself at risk potentially, or live wherever you can with whatever your means allow you to without having to pay the expense of commuting if you can get a remote job. So absolutely, equity is one of the key foundations of what we do at Foundry College. There shouldn't be barriers to entry to that kind of life.
Agreed. And that's literally a mic drop moment. I love everything that you're doing, and we really are so grateful that you took the time to speak with us today. We know that you're really busy. So we are really just in awe of a lot of the things, the great things that you're doing, and the insights that you share today have been extremely valuable. So we want to be cognizant of your time and just ask our last couple of questions to wrap things up. The first one would be, are there any insights or initiatives or anything that you're pursuing at Foundry besides the secret programs that you're going to be rolling out that Joe tried to get you to reveal? But are there any initiatives or anything that you want to share with us that we didn't get to talk about? And the other question would be, what do you see as the future for higher education?
So in terms of path-breaking initiatives, we're a venture-backed company, so we're real careful about, we know we have competition, so we're really careful about giving people a sense of whether we might, to use the ancient phrase, get gazumped by someone else who might get out there in the market before we do. We're not only up against small companies, other startups, but we're up against Google. So, you know, I think the ones that the initiatives I've talked about, I think the new certified credentials, you'll see that they're in fields that are growing very rapidly, again, that are remote, accessible, and that people really like to do, right? I've met very few coders who actually love coding. There are some that do, and maybe there are 25% of the population that would, you know, be happy doing that for a living. These are things that you can do for a lifetime, where you have real human interaction with others that will continue for at least the next 20 years. So the one I really want to focus on is the St. Francis partnership. I think it's a nationally scalable model. I think as an ed tech company, we're based in San Francisco. I live in New York. The public school systems in the United States are under tremendous strain, you know, even before the pandemic, especially, you know, mid late pandemic. We want to support them. We want to support the public schools around the country, especially large inner city public schools. And we know we can take those students and we can continue them into college if they want, or if they want to jump off and get a job with us, you know, the credentials that we give, we can do that as well. We take that as one of our responsibilities to the planet to do that. In terms of where I see higher ed, I think what I'd do is I'd fall back on what I said before. I think, you know, again, some of my colleagues might not like me to say this, but not only are learners consumers, but they're investors, right? They want a return on their investment, and they want a rapid return on their investment. They don't want to wait 10 years. They don't want to wait 4 years. They don't want to wait a year. They want to know what they're going to get out of it and when they're going to get it. And I think in the past, you know, some of my colleagues, maybe even myself 20 years ago, might have said, well, that's just reductive. My undergraduate degree is in something entirely impractical. there's nothing about my undergraduate degree explicitly that I apply. They taught me ways of thinking, and I'll forever be grateful for learning that way. Not everyone can afford to spend the money and the time, the 4 years I spent there, to do that. If I can find ways, if we can at Foundry College can find ways to teach those skills to a wider range of people, I think that's where higher education is going. They want to know what they're going to get from their time and when they're going to get it. And the sooner that everyone can see that, I think the better everyone will be. It doesn't mean that schools shouldn't have a four-year program for people that are really willing to put in 4 years to do that, but not providing a shorter track for people that are not in that mindset, I think really does limit access and it does limit equity.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another amazing episode of the YetUp Experience podcast with Akiba Kovitz, president and CEO of Foundry College. Akiba, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks to both of you. I've appreciated listening to the other podcasts. I think you guys are really creating a place where everyone can go and get a really quick education whenever they want to on every part of the higher ed experience. So thanks to both of you.
Hey everybody, we hope you enjoyed that episode of the EdUp Experience. To learn more about the EdUp Experience, please visit our website at www.edupexperience.com and subscribe to our email list. Please share this podcast, head over to Apple, and please give us a rating and review. We appreciate your feedback. And of course, subscribe to the EdUp Experience so you're notified when our episodes drop. Here at the EdUp Experience, our goal is to make education your business. Thanks for listening.